My name's Kathy Bayless. I'm an associate professor at the University of Illinois.
All right, Kathy, you guys have taken a close look at the new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement known as USMCA. It has not been ratified, and since it was announced, we do have a new Congress. But people are wondering, you know, how different is it from NAFTA? Kind of let's make that our starting point. What are the major differences, and what are the similarities?
Let me start by saying it's really not very different at all. Most of NAFTA remains unchanged, so it's got the same tariff levels. It's not changing anything in terms of the past reductions or past agreements in terms of how we work around non-tariff barriers, like setting standards across the three countries. All of that stuff is still in place. The few differences are the one that I think most folks have heard about, and that's the changes to some of the automobile rules in terms of where cars need to be made to travel between the three countries tariff-free. And the old rules were that I think it was 62% of the content or the value of those cars had to be made in North America, and that's now increased to 75%. And then there's the other thing that's gotten a fair bit of attention is this rule that we want a chunk of that, those cars to be made by workers earning an average of $16 an hour. And that's primarily targeted, of course, at Mexico and trying to encourage either increased wage rates there in the automobile sector or fewer jobs moving to Mexico.
In terms of agriculture, what are the changes?
So those are the stuff that got a lot of attention. The stuff in ag that got attention was primarily around Canadian dairy. And that's partially because the President Trump sort of made this a signature thing for him that he wanted to get some changes in terms of U.S. market access to Canadian dairy. And so there was some, although it's basically the same thing that Canada had agreed to under the Trans-Pacific Partnership that the U.S. pulled out of back a year or so ago. So in some ways, it's things that we would have gotten if we'd have stayed in the Trans-Pacific Partnership anyway. And those things are, we get slightly increased access to the Canadian dairy market, but I think it's 3.65% of the Canadian dairy market. So it's not huge. And that's access that's tariff-free. So any exports above that face very, very high Canadian dairy tariffs on their dairy imports. The other thing, and this was an issue particularly for some producers in the U.S., was that Canada got rid of what's called its Class 7 dairy pricing. And what that did was it basically was taking it's a very processed dairy product that's coming essentially from whey and other stuff that's the sort of, and skim milk, stuff that's basically left over after you've pulled off the butter fat. And part of the thing is Canada and the U.S. right now sort of have an excess amount of production of that product because there's so much demand for butter fat. And so what Canada had done is they'd set up sort of a two-tier pricing policy that allowed sort of particularly low prices to exist for this product, and it's used in a lot of dairy processing. And so this means that the trick was with having that extra low price in Canada meant that the U.S. essentially couldn't compete in that market in Canada. So now they've gotten rid of that extra low pricing category, which gives the U.S. a little more access to that specific category of goods. But it's not a huge market. That might make a difference for a few folks, but it's not, we're not talking large dollars here. if that makes sense.
Sure. We're hearing, you know, positive feedback from U.S. dairy farmers about it. So that's, you know, that seems to be the, yeah. But also other issues remain in terms of, like, for example, passing this, getting this thing ratified. We do have a new Congress. What are you hearing? What is your analysis? And of course, you can't predict what you can't predict what Congress will do. But kind of talk to us about that.
Of that, yeah, no, of course. And so one of the things that is that this is now, it's come up, it's now a bit more in question just because the Democrats hold the House, and there's a lot of argument that the kind of pro-labor changes that were made aren't, there's concern that they aren't going to be enforced. And B, there's concern that like setting a wage rate, but without sort of any kind of adjustment for inflation, might not help in the long run. And so the Democrats are arguing that they would like to see some of those things changed. Mexico is also now arguing, saying, look, we aren't going to sign off on this until the U.S. gets rid of its steel tariffs on us. So there's a bit of pushback also from Mexico. I have no idea whether this means that we're looking at trying to reopen negotiations, because if we do, who knows what will happen. it's very interesting, shall we say.
Right, and there is talk that it won't happen in the lame duck session, but that
exactly, yeah. Which means, so therefore, it moves over to the point where the Democrats have control of the House. Yeah.
Okay. And Canada, of course, isn't happy with our steel and aluminum tariffs either.
Exactly. And so I haven't heard the same statements out of Canada that I've heard out of Mexico, sort of saying that, you know, that we need to get rid of them. But at the same time, it's sort of ironic that we're trying to get this passed at the same time that we're in this trade war where Canada is talking about increasing its retaliatory tariffs against the U.S. because of the steel tariffs. So in some ways, in terms of effects on agriculture, I frankly think the retaliatory tariffs are likely to have a bigger effect than the sort of new, you know, NAFTA. Again, I don't want to even call it NAFTA 2.0. It's really NAFTA 1.01. It's really not that different from the old agreement.